est sur location.
De quoi le sortir?
Location.
Welcome to Echolocation, the show that eavesdrops on Mother Nature. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lojudis, and this is the spring 2022 broadcast of the show. So there hasn't been all that much to listen to here in the hills of Greene County as we make a slow transition from winter to spring. We're moving into that time of year when I eagerly await the return of the raucous natural soundscape. I face each spring with a little bit of trepidation, though, I will admit. Because of the worldwide issues of climate change and biodiversity loss, I worry that the vibrant sounds of birds and frogs might be diminished or silenced over time. So it's with relief that I've welcomed back the sounds of migratory birds like American woodcock and killdeer and heard the first calls of spring peepers and wood frogs. But during this past long, dark winter, I thought a lot about sounds that humans cannot silence or drown out. Sounds that are too remote, inaccessible, or gigantic for us to influence, like the music of the spheres. I've read that in ancient Greece, the philosopher and mathematician Pythagoras thought the celestial bodies made music. He applied discoveries about the relationship between musical pitch and vibration to the heavens to describe what he called the music of the spheres.
Thank you.
explain this better, I'm going to quote a little bit from an article that was written by Dana Samuel, who is a PhD student at Concordia University, which starts with a story about Pythagoras's epiphany about the vibrational nature of sound, which occurred as he walked past the forge of a blacksmith and listened to the different tones and resonances of hammers pounding iron. So, quoting from the article, Pythagoras reportedly examined the hammers and concluded that the hammers that were harmonious with one another shared a relationship in their respective weights. They were simple fractions such as one half or one quarter. Thus, he rationalized that the 1-to-2 ratios produced an octave, the same note with a higher pitch. Other ratios produced different harmonies. This can be evidenced in string instruments where strings of different lengths produce different tones. String instruments also make visible the vibrations that become sound. The human ear hears sound when objects are in motion. Pluck a guitar string and watch the resulting vibrations and accompanying sound. Moving the string creates corresponding ripples of movement reverberating through its length and through the air. These vibrations, sound waves, travel to the middle and inner ear, where the same frequencies of vibration are transmitted, then amplified. Pythagoras, extrapolating these effects, reasoned that because objects produce sound when in motion, planets moving in orbit should also produce a sound. He surmised that between the Earth and the Moon, there is one full tone, between the Moon and Mercury, one half tone, and between Venus and the Sun, 1.5 tones. He measured distance based on relative speed. Faster moving planets were closer to the Earth and slower moving planets further away. These ratios corresponded to tonal music intervals on the Pythagorean scale. So objects in motion vibrate and produce sounds, and planets are very large bodies in motion. Therefore, he postulated that they must also produce a sound. Given that their relative distances were concordant with musical intervals, Pythagoras surmised that the resulting sound must be a harmony, a music of the spheres. However, this theory and the resulting sound should be so loud that humans would hear it on Earth, and yet they don't seem to. Why was this sound inaudible? Pythagoras and his followers surmised that because it was continually sounding, humans had no point of comparison, no real sense of silence or difference, and therefore could not distinguish it from our known idea of silence. So with the musings of ancient Greek philosophers on my mind, I came across an article published on a website called strangesounds.org. It was published in 2017 and entitled Earth's Hum Captured on the Ocean Floor. The article shares ideas about efforts to study a low-frequency vibrational signal that the Earth constantly generates. Scientists have long known that earthquakes can cause the Earth to vibrate for extended periods of time, but over the past 30 years or so, researchers have shown that the vibrational signals persist even when no earthquakes have occurred. And in 2017, Martha Dean, who is a geophysicist at the Paris Institute of Earth Physics in Paris, and her colleagues published a study that detailed their work to capture the Earth's hum using a network of seismometer stations located on the ocean floor. And their study determined that the Earth's natural vibration peaks at several frequencies between 2.9 and 4.5 millihertz. These vibrations can't be heard by people because they're approximately 10,000 times smaller than the lower hearing threshold of the human ear, which is 20 hertz. So beyond contemplating the inaudible sound of planets, I've also been intrigued by string theory, a branch of quantum physics that examines the vibration of subatomic particles. And for about a year now, I've been struggling to understand the concepts in the book, The God Equation, written by theoretical physicist and professor at City College of New York, Michio Kaku. I was initially engaged by Dr. Kaku's description of vibrating subatomic particles in musical terms, and I'm quoting here. The missing idea is music. Music of tiny particles. If I had a super microscope and I could peer into an electron, I would not see a dot at all. I would see a rubber band. And as the rubber band vibrates at a different frequency, it changes into a neutrino. It changes again into a quark. In fact, all of the hundreds of subatomic particles that we've seen are nothing but different vibrations of the same string. So physics is the harmonies that you can write on these strings. Chemistry is the melody you can play on interacting strings. The universe is a symphony of strings. And the mind of God is cosmic music resonating through hyperspace.
Thank you.
You're listening to Echolocation on WGXC and wavefarm.org. And we just heard the song Sonata de Kinnor by Sarah J. Rich from her collection String Theory on archive.org. Rich is a Chicago-based cellist, composer, and technologist, and she describes string theory as an exploration of the acoustic structures of strings and signs. The tracks on String Theory range from the strictly notated tonal music like we just heard on Sonata de Kinnor to improvised noise that you can hear on another track called Duo for Solo Cello. But getting back to our exploration of the music of the spheres, when we left off, the theoretical physicist Michio Kaku had described the mind of God as cosmic music resonating through hyperspace. And it's a little surprising to hear a scientist talk about deities, but it got me thinking about how religion and cultural traditions around the world refer to cosmic resonance and divine sound. So I felt like it was a little bit of synchronicity when I recently listened to a talk given by a gentleman named Sean Stevens, who's a member of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of the Mohican people, who were the people who lived here in the Upper Hudson Valley for thousands of years before being forcibly displaced by the Dutch and English colonialists. And Sean gave a Zoom talk that was sponsored by the Forge Project, which is a Native-led initiative centered on Indigenous art, decolonial education, and supporting leaders in culture, food security, and land justice, which is located in Columbia County. The talk was entitled Music and Storytelling, and Sean and the folks at the Forge Project were kind enough to allow me to get a recording of his talk so that I could share an excerpt So we're going to hear Paloma Wake giving a little more information about the Forge Project and Education Director Heather Briegel introducing Sean Stevens. And then we'll hear Mr. Stevens giving a perspective on Music of the Spheres.
I launched in 2021, Forge Project is a Native-led initiative centered on decolonial education, Indigenous art, and supporting leaders in culture, food security, and land justice. Forge serves the social and cultural landscape of shared communities through a funded fellowship program, public programming like this, and events, a lending art collection focused on living Indigenous artists, and a teaching farm developed in partnership with Sky High Farm. Please follow Forge on social media at Forge Project NY and sign up for our mailing list at forgeproject.com. Now, I'd like to introduce you to Forge Project Director of Education, Heather Briegel. Heather is a citizen of the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin and a first-line descendant Stockbridge Munsee. She is a graduate of Madonna University in Michigan and holds a Master of Arts in U.S. History. Heather is a former Director of Cultural Affairs for the Stockbridge Munsee community and travels frequently to present on Native American history, including policy and activism. Thank you so much for your work, Heather, and I will turn it over to you to acknowledge the land that we are on and to introduce our guest.
Thanks, Paloma. Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us. First and foremost, I would like to acknowledge the land that we are on. We acknowledge that we are coming from all different locations that were ancestral homes of Indigenous nations. In upstate New York, where I'm at, we acknowledge the Mahicaniac, the people of the waters that are never still. We acknowledge that through forced land cessions and removal, this nation was removed from the land that they called home, and their seat of government is now located in Wisconsin, and they are known as the Stockbridge Munsee community. We pay honor and respect to their ancestors, past and present, and we understand that this acknowledgement is just a first step in the process of building a more inclusive and equitable space for all. And now I'm just going to take a moment and introduce our speaker, who I'm very excited that we have this evening. Sean Stevens is an enrolled member of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohicans. He lives among his people who are originally from the Hudson Valley, but now reside in Bowler, Wisconsin. Sean is a spiritualist, musician, artist, historian, and sharer of knowledge, an ordained minister of the Universal Church of Light, and is a certified facilitator of White Bison's Mending Broken Hearts and Unresolved Grief. Sean has been fulfilling his path journey for the past few decades by doing a variety of sharing his people's ancestral lands as well as the Midwest. Sean describes himself as a helper to not only his people, but to all of Creator's children. He explains that the spiritual path is to share the many things given to him for direction and purpose. And I am very honored to say that with that, we welcome Sean Stevens. Again, if you have any questions, please utilize the chat feature or the Q&A feature, and we will get to them at the end. But Sean, thank you so much for being here, and I'm going to turn it over to you.
Oh, hello, Heather. Well, we're going to talk to you. My name is Sean Stevens, as Heather had said, and I am from the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohicans, and it's a great honor to be here tonight. My friend Heather, who set this up, for me to share with everyone. Music is something that we consider as a gift, from the Creator and from the spirits to give to mankind, not just us Native Americans, but all the Indigenous people in the beginning, that we can use these for celebrations, for prayer, especially dancing as well. Dancing is another part. As music is a vibration, and it is tones and beats, put into an energy. And when you think of it deep down, we're all made of energy and matter. The very story of our drum is that beep, and that's the sound of creation. That's the sound of the beginning of the universe. Everything that comes from within that beat, from that tone, all matter, all energy, everything, not only the stars and the planets and everything that's within the universe ourselves as well. And music always seems to have a profound effect on people. you know, no matter what it is, there's different types of music. I like to call them, there's happy music, sad music. There's even angry music, if you might have heard some of that. And it puts people, you know, and it seems to change, you know, how the people are feeling. Now, I always like to tell people, if you're sad and in a bad place, the last thing you want to do is put on sad music. You know, if you put on happy music, spiritual music, it's going to change, you know, the way you're feeling. And it all depends on what you soak yourself within. Okay. Now, with me, I've learned to play the flute, and I've been a drummer and singer for over the last 20 years. And just the energy that comes from it. And it's not just, you know, it just playing music. It has an effect on people, it has a very profound effect. The energy, the spirit that comes through. And as I said, somebody had made a saying where words fail, music speaks. And I completely believe that. Not only, you know, with like say instruments, say as a flute or a guitar, you know, our own voices. Now with our own voices, our voices are a musical instrument as well. And our voice is just a reflection of our own spirit, you know, which comes from that universal energy. I'm going to start out by playing a flute song. Now, this is a welcome song. Now, there are, of course, like I said, there is no words to it, but you have to understand, you get the feeling of it. You know, maybe even close your eyes and try to get that understanding. It's not so much the words that come, it's that energy that comes from the player. And if you can feel that, you're very blessed. That means from my heart, that's my heart welcoming all of you here today. And then I'm very appreciative for you to come and for you to listen to my stories and do the music that I'm about to share. And like I said, these are gifts. These are gifts that are meant for all mankind. And you should have been able to feel a little bit of that inner spirit, that spiritual energy that comes from the flute. I mean, one of my mentors says that the flute music, it helps the parasympathetic nervous system. Not exactly quite sure what that is, but it sounds pretty cool. but it really helps. It's helped so many. I've gone to hospitals and helped people who are in pain, and just the music. The music was something that helped center their mind and helped to calm their spirit. And it's just been a joy. It's been a joy that these gifts were bestowed onto me. And for me, I started out just sitting around the campfire at home, you know, on the reservation. You know, I never really planned on, you know, sharing anything. You know, but for me, it was a gift that was given to me. And one of my mentors told me that when you're given gifts like these, you're meant to share them with other people. You know, don't be selfish, he said. And so I began to share these things. And it's kind of hard because I'm still a little bit old school native, to where a lot of times growing up, well, we didn't really share a whole lot of things with people because we have had so many things taken from us, so many things not only taken from us, but forced to forget and not be able to remember anymore. And so for a long time, we were very, very cautious of sharing. But we've come into a time to where we need to share. And some of our old prophecies will say that there'll be a time when people of the earth will come to the native people. They'll come to them for these teachings, you know, to help them connect with their own indigenous ancestry and way of life. And for being indigenous, to me, it's not so much as a race of people, it's an understanding of your connections. And if you understand your connections, you understand that you are connected to all human beings. You are connected to all plants, animals, even the fungus and the earth, and even the minerals that are within the earth. We are all connected to this earth. We are a part of it. Even though we can point in different directions where our ancestors may have come from. Now, if we get on a spaceship and go a million miles away, we're all going to point to one spot. And that's this earth. That's Mother Earth, our earth. And we come to help answer that call and answer that prophecy.
You're listening to Echolocation on WGXC and wavefarm.org. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lojudis, and we just heard an excerpt from a talk entitled Music and Storytelling that Sean Stevens recently gave for the Forge Project, followed by the song Mystic from the band Music of the Spheres. We started out the show talking a little about the anxiety that some of us feel because of climate change. And now we're going to share a piece from sound artist Adrian Lilly that I feel gives voice to some of that anxiety, as well as some of the denial that some of us feel. Adrian Lilly is a sound designer, editor, and audio artist who specializes in experimental documentary and collage. She's worked with shows on WFMU, WNYC, Vox, iHeartRadio, and more. And the piece we're going to listen to is called I Imagine It Would Rise, which you can find on earlid.org. In her description of the piece, Adrian writes, I was thinking a lot about inertia and about being an individual who is part of the problem, but with no way of getting out of that cycle. There aren't monsters here, just people remembering that the sea will rise.
I see one of the doors in the balcony slide shut.
Birds are making noises and just relaxing at the moment and playing rocks and all sorts of crazy vegetation, which is part of being in Florida, which I love, even though I don't always love it. But birds are making noises and seeing rocks and all sorts of crazy vegetation. But when you see families together and people just relaxing, you know, with the birds and the sand and the rocks. It's, I guess it's what we all kind of strive to be. It's just part of, you know, each other's lives in a positive way. You say when you die that it's hard to really actually envision your own death because you can't imagine this spot, like where I'm sitting right now, without me being here. You say when you die that it's hard to really actually envision your own death because you can't imagine this spot, like where I'm sitting right now, without birds or... I mean, I can imagine a spot being here, but me not being anywhere in this world. Even think about the spot anymore.
I just want to apologize.
This morning we saw some kind of osprey or eagle perched on top of the building, just sitting there, just for a really long time, I bet for over an hour.
It's 5 a.m. in the morning.
Right.
Pelicans going by. It's amazing they can swim so close to the water. Tips of the wings just dip into the water. I guess I wish everybody could
it's a big Ponzi scheme.
Be exposed
it's,
to
it's gonna create another
this
bubble.
Kind of nature.
And what they're doing, chemtrailing our
think
skies every day. I go out and I see these crystals.
It's hard to find a really look
rainbows in the sky
and see and relax.
Chemtrails, it's disgusting.
And
I think it's just horrible because they're creating a problem that is non-existent.
Well, what's around
CO2,
us?
CO2.
I'm
glad he's not
just
going.
Relax and watch and see the
and
shadow
does,
of the building.
It will be the death of our country.
And the different bugs and rodents.
If we're this scared,
weather.
Let's just revert back to
instead of just rushing through it
and
all.
Let's make it here and eat it here instead of shipping it to China and having them ship
just
it back
looking
here.
At all the differences
because
in our
cargo ships
in our
for $309 worth of fuel an hour.
We didn't really see each other.
Other
say, oh, yeah, that person has I guess we could sit here all day just watching the water and thinking about things.
Right.
Only the sun.
Lots of gray hair. And trying to be in the present, not more noticing.
You realize
it's all right.
When
okay. Somebody caught fish.
Mars and Jupiter.
Right.
Mars and Jupiter and Pluto. So
yeah, the pelicans are hoping it's going to be for them. But I get busy just
this
like
is about the global elite.
Underwater.
He's the one that predicted the flood was going to come.
I imagine it would rise for a long time,
and
I think.
Whenever I sit here,
it'd be weird all the hotels are alone. Still do sometimes.
A beach is an expanse of land that gradually enters a body of water.
It's 5 a.m. in the morning.
Right.
It's 5 a.m. in the morning. Somewhere in the Outer Banks, and I'm walking along the beach. It's gray out. The sky's gray. There's fog hanging over the water. There are three condominiums about 20 stories tall each, somewhere to my left. There's no one on the beach. It's early, but I would still expect to see a few people somewhere, but I don't see anyone. And as I'm walking along the beach, I see a straw hat lying in the sand, and I go to pick it up, and I look around to see who it could be, who it could belong to, and I After a moment, I catch something out of the corner of my eye up on the balcony of one of the condominiums, and I think I see someone waving down at me. I stare at him for a few moments, and then the clouds sort of shift, and the quality of the light changes a bit, and I don't see anyone anymore. So after a minute, I put the hat back down, and I walk over to the water, and I stand right at the edge of the water, and I wait for the wave to crash over my feet, and it does, and when it does, it's very cold, and I don't really mind it, but I'm aware that if I stay in for too long, my feet will get numb, but I do stay in, and I stay in until my feet start to sink into the sand. You know, the way the water washes away the sand beneath your feet. You stand in the water in the ocean for too long. Anyway. Yeah. I guess that's all I remember.
Feel like it's okay just to sit and be. Birds are making noises, and even though I don't always love it, but maybe when you get older, you feel like it's okay just to sit and be. I guess my mother used to take baths. But I think sometimes she really wasn't sleeping. Sometimes I think she was just part of, you know, each other's lives in a positive way. They say when you die, that it's hard to really actually envision your own death because you can't imagine this spot, like where I'm sitting right now, without me being here. I mean, I can imagine a spot being here, but me not being anywhere in this world to even think about the spot anymore.
That a long time ago, the Lakota people had a holy Manadu. A Manadu is a large, great spirit that the translation would be like angel. It's like an angel. Not a person spirit, but a higher form spirit. Holy Spirit come to them and give them their indigenous teachings and give them many, many teachings. And she had said that they would need these teachings, you know, and there would come a time where people would fall away from the teachings and such, but she would give a sign of her return. And it would be at a time where there's a lot of bad things going on in the world and that people are going to need to lean on their indigenous teachings again. Her name was, they call her the White Buffalo Calf Woman. And the teaching, the sign was to be when the white buffalo calf was born. Now, not an albino, and white buffalo calves are in all of history, in the history of the United States and even Native American oral history, there has never been a white buffalo calf born until even August in 1994 is when it happened. And this was a call that went out to people, you know, especially the knowledge keepers, to say, this is the time we need to start getting back to our indigenous ways. This is a time we need to start sharing with many, many people. We need to get back to our indigenous mindset, to where we live. And it doesn't mean go back to living in huts or anything, but understanding our connection, because like, you got pollution, you got global warming and oil spills and all these terrible things that are happening to the earth, Fukushima, Chernobyl, all these terrible things that if we keep going the way we are, we're not going to be here anymore. The earth will be fine. It'll recover, but we won't be fine with the earth. We will not be here to help. And I've seen so many things back in 1992, just an overload of you know, even Native people wanting to know more about their culture, wanting to know about their heritage, seeing so many things like the wolf packs coming back, the coyotes, the turkeys in the woods, eagles. When I was young, you know, we didn't see eagles around the reservation. You know, if somebody said they saw one, mostly thought they were BS, and, you know, but they're all back. They came back so strong, and it was a good sign. It was a great sign. It wasn't like a confusing quatrain that you can put, you know, in any other kind of timeline that could fit almost anywhere. It was pretty plain and simple when that white buffalo calf was born. Okay. I was 24 at the time, I believe. And really, this whole new age is upon us. And many, many, many more of us are starting to share. Even some of us who are still from the old school ways, even though it might feel a bit uncomfortable, we got to do it anyway. You know, because the earth needs it. Mankind needs it to let everybody know we're all brothers and sisters. We are all one. We are all part of this earth. And we need to recognize that. There was once a Kickapoo prophet. He had had a dream as well. And he was talking to the creator. And the creator had showed him a vision of all these people on earth, the white man, the red man, the black man, the yellow man, people of all colors. And they were all arguing over things. They were all arguing over the earth. They were arguing over things from the earth. And came. And he told this man, he said, you go back and you tell those people that the earth belongs to me, to the creator, and that they're not to forget that. Okay, and all of them, they are all family. They need to remember this. There shouldn't be squabbling back for, they need to come back as a family. So a lot of these prophecies are coming through in our age and our time. And it's a good thing we've got time. I mean, it's been 28 years or so since the white buffalo calf was born. But thankfully, we've got a little bit of time to change and to help, that not only help our way of thinking and have that indigenous way of thinking, our connections to the earth, but changing things, you know, from fossil fuels into, you know, into better ways, you know, different ways that we can go with electricity, with different ways instead of polluting, you know, our oceans, polluting our lands, polluting, because we're making the earth sick. And we make the earth sick, we will be sick because we are connected to the earth.
Thanks for listening to Echolocation on WGXC and wavefarm.org. Special thanks to Sean Stevens and Adrian Lilly for their contributions to this evening's program. You can find links to all the work we've shared, as well as references, at echolocation/WGXC at facebook.com. We're going to have Sarah J. Rich serenade us out with another selection from her collection, String Theory. I'm Elizabeth Lojudis, reminding you to keep an ear to the ground, but don't forget to listen for the stars.
Thank you.